The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 433, recorded on August 1st, 2016. Welcome to the 433rd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 266th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Dirk.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So, there's a lot of interesting news popping up now, a lot of rumors, a lot of weird stuff. But before we even get into that, what have you been playing, TJ?
Green Man Gaming had a summer sale this last couple weeks, and Stellaris ended up on it. And I've been hearing good things about it for a while, so I finally pulled the trigger. It's fun. It's like it reminds me of sort of Age of Kings in that sort of grand strat. I guess it would be from the same people too. Didn't Paradox Interactive do Age of Kings?
Age of Kings? No, that was still Ensemble.
Okay.
Oh, wait. Are you talking about Age of Empires, Age of Kings?
No, I think I'm thinking of something else.
Oh, you're thinking of Paradox. Okay, so either you're talking about Crusader Kings 2.
Crusader Kings, that was the
right
one.
There you go.
But yeah, it's sort of that grand strategy, never-ending game. You build an empire among the stars, and you sort of just make a race from the bottom up and play the
Oh, Stellaris, yeah. I actually got a review copy of it and a code, but I never downloaded it. at some point I will. Let's see, there it is. Grayed out on my Steam.
Yeah. It's good. It's really enjoyable. I got crushed the first time I played it, which is like sort of expected out of a game like that. Mm. But the second time around, I made my thrifty race of space foxes, or star foxes, into a
Did you do a barrel roll?
What's up?
Did you do a barrel roll?
Yes. Many. And it's fun. It's really fun so far. Other than that, I've still been working on my Rainbow Six Siege game. Still garbage, still working on it. Still getting ready for the Brazil update.
Yeah. You're going to love this. I still have the Stomping Land installed on Steam.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. For those of you who don't know what the Stomping Land was, it was a Kickstarter project. People were on an island with dinosaurs, and the creator just quit.
Wow. That sucks.
Yeah.
It's sort of a famous horror story of Kickstarter. Not as bad as Mansion Lord, in which it was just a big scam, which I also backed. Fortunately, I wasn't one of those people who backed a lot of money for that.
I don't think any story is ever going to beat the one where the Kickstarter owners just spent the money on hookers and booze.
You know what? I still think Project Phoenix is worse, even though they had good intentions. They started a Kickstarter project, and after it was funded, they didn't have the programmer ready because they weren't ready. They had people they wanted to hire, and those people decided they didn't want to do it. So they had no developer, no programmer. They had a guy doing the music. He was 22. After 2 years, he quit.
So, jeez, that is pretty bad.
Yeah, Project Phoenix was a disaster. It's going to come out sometime in 2019, from what I understand. So, yeah.
I'm glad I didn't back that one.
Okay. I know you were the one who brought it up to me, Scott.
Yeah, I tried to follow it, but I didn't back it up because I wanted to wait for it to get closer to release before deciding if I even wanted to buy it or not. And I really wasn't sure. And again, it was kind of a vague story idea they had, and apparently, like you said, they weren't ready with anything, and so it was just a whole lot of hype and not a lot of substance.
You know, I could have avoided being scammed if I had done even the slightest bit of research on Golgun Games, because had I done that, I would have noticed they'd never done anything before, and there were some other warning signs, which I blithely did not. I actually spoke to the person running the Kickstarter twice. And he was friendly but vague, and that should have been a warning too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that one was just out and out robbery, and that, I was still writing for Strategy Informer at the time. So that tells you when I did it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I did the biggest thing ever backed on Kickstarter was Psychonauts 2. $800. And it wasn't even Kickstarter. That was Fig.
Right.
The biggest thing I ever backed on Kickstarter was Pillars of Eternity for $147.
That was a nice sale, too, and I really thought about going for it, and I missed out.
Did you kickstart that, Scott, or did you buy it?
Yes,
when
I
it...
did. Okay. I kickstarted it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I love the
It's Obsidian.
Like,
yeah, I get it. I got the big... I got the huge box and all the physical stuff. I'm looking at it right now. And also, I know Chris Avalon, so I decided, hey, why not? Yeah, I was really excited. I still haven't gotten past the first area, the first town, because I haven't had time.
Mm.
And I know there's two expansions for it, which I haven't bought yet. I'll buy them either when they're on sale or when I finish the main story, whenever that is.
Yeah, it's... I've played all of it, almost all of it, but...
yes, but played. you're the Baldur's Gate isometric fan.
Yes, I am.
So
I'm kicking myself over skipping on that one in the sale. I really want to play it.
Oh, I know something that I did.
Baldur's Gate, TJ, is that what you want to play? Or
Pillars of Eternity.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They're both good, but yeah.
I will tell you what I did back for a lot on Kickstarter. For $120-some-odd, I backed System Shock Remastered.
That will end up paying off pretty well. That is looking pretty great.
I tried the demo before I even backed it, and I said, okay, I'm backing it.
Yeah, Dog Galaxy gave away System Shock 2 for their
Remastered.
Sale.
Yeah, I mean, I already own System Shock 2, and I actually have the first System Shock, but the controls are so bad because remember, this is before mouse and keyboard. This was back when it was keyboard, and mouse was almost unheard of. So now that there's a controllable System Shock, I'll get into it. And it's very atmospheric. I hope the final game matches what the demo is like, because we know that demos don't always end up matching their things, because you could just say that about this the gameplay that they originally showed of Mighty No. 9, was darker, more higher resolution, a lot more visual effects.
I will say this, so the guy that ran the Mighty No. 9, he is a great developer, but
yeah,
they didn't really know what they were doing as far as like
kickstarting, crowdfunding. No, they didn't. I didn't understand.
Night Dive, on the other hand, has revamped a lot of old titles and done.
Oh yeah, well
didn't they do
the Baldur's 1 and 2 remastered as well, and they also did the expansion? Or am I thinking someone else?
That's Beamdog.
Okay, Beamdog. Okay.
They remastered not just System Shock, but they remastered both of the Turok games.
Yeah.
They've remastered quite a few old classics and brought them onto new stuff, and they're doing a pretty good job of it. I have faith in them.
Yeah. Well, people like Double Fine, they learned their lesson with Broken Age, because I also backed theirs Massive Chalice, and it was done like that. They did that almost. They must have been developing at the time they started the Kickstarter. I still haven't gone through that a lot as well, but I'll say it's sort of like a fantasy version of XCOM. So that's worth a look. If you like tactical stuff like XCOM, try Mighty No. 9.
Mighty No. 9? Massive Chalice.
I'm sorry, Massive Chalice. Oh, by the way, Shroud of the Avatar is updating on my Steam as well right now, too. That's another game I backed. And that's, of course, Richard Garriott. And I did not know it was going to be an MMO. Or mostly MMO. It's sort of like a massively multiplayer role-playing game.
You really should have been paying better attention.
The way they described it, and it was supposed to be single-player with some multiplayer possibilities, I didn't know they were going to go, or maybe they're just testing out Fallout, you know, multiplayer to see how it runs. I don't know. I mean, I'll try it. I mean, I bought it, so I might as well try it when I get a chance. Oh, Shadowrun Returns, I'm also looking at. I never bought any of the expansions, and I never finished that game. But, Scott, did you play Shadowrun Returns?
Yes, I did.
Okay. I was thinking, because isometric RPG, it may not be fantasy, but...
I definitely played that as well as The Wasteland 2, and I got the Shadowrun Dragonborn or Dragon something, Dragonfire something, and then the Hong Kong one. They also did that one. Also got released as well.
Yeah, I know. I got the PR for that. I could have gotten it for free if I wanted to, but I just
Why didn't you?
I'm too much stuff. I'm never gonna be able to review it. Sorry. I was gonna be honest. I could have said, just send me off the code and I'll talk about it sometime. one game that I really want to play, which I have, and it's still in early access, but I haven't been playing it that much, is Sir, You Are Being Hunted.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who don't know that, that's the robot equivalent of DayZ. Mm-hmm. And it looks really interesting. When I played it, it was very tense. Because off in the distance you hear... an upper-class British robot calling out for you and trying to get you to reveal yourself in the tall grass. So, yeah, I also have Goddess. I wonder if I played that, if I'd get something out of it. I also have a grayed-out thing which I never heard of. Goddess Wars? What? What the hell is Goddess Wars? Is that the multiplayer version of Goddess? I mean, I can download it if I want to. I will say this, one of the games which I backed on Kickstarter, which is really looking really nice, from what little I've played of it, and that is Stonehearth. Not Hearthstone, Stonehearth. It's different. Stonehearth is what Goddess wanted to be. It's sort of like a god game in which, it's sort of like an easier version of Dwarf Fortress, maybe? You know? And it's going pretty well. It's not a finished product yet. Which reminds me, I still have Massive Orion in early access. I've stayed off it, not because I don't want to play it, but because I want to see what they add before I play it again, because they keep on adding stuff. So, and I'm the sort of person who prefers to play a finished product, but Massive Orion is sort of like an exception to that, you know? So, oh yeah, I also backed Wasteland 2, of course. And, oh geez, I forgot his name. I can't believe this. Oh, damn it. What is his name? He's the developer behind it, you know? And he's been behind all the other stuff, too.
Chris Avalon?
No. This is a guy from EA, who used to be with EA. Brian Fargo, that's right. Brian Fargo. I got a copy of him. I got the director's cut for, well, everybody got the director's cut, but I talked to him about it. And I also chatted with him at E3 last year when they were doing the Xbox One version of it. And I liked it, you know, but it was the same exact thing. I said, oh, the controls are nice. I already played Wasteland 2, so that's all I could say is that the controls are good and everything else is just the way I remember it. So, Scott, what have you backed on Kickstarter that you've been enjoying?
Well, let's see. I enjoy...
Aside from Pillars of Eternity.
I didn't back Shadowgate, but I did buy it and play it. Shadowrun Hong Kong, that I played and was enjoying that one.
Did you back it or did you just buy it?
I backed that one.
Okay.
I bought the, like I said, the Shadowrun when that one came out.
Oh shit! That reminds me. You know what else I backed? They haven't sent out a early access version of it. I'm really looking forward to it, and that's BattleTech.
I also backed Bard's Tale 4.
Oh yeah, that's Brian Fargo's other project.
Yeah, and I got the level that'll allow me to get Tides of Numera. The next Planescape.
I also have that too. I backed that as well. The Planescape Torment spiritual successor reboot sort of thing. I have Planescape Tormented, but I haven't played through it yet. I know it's very emotional, the game. Yeah, how about you, TJ?
I'm looking at my library right now because there's only two projects that I've ever backed, and I'm trying to remember what they are. The first one was
Mighty Number 9.
No. The first one was Yooka-Laylee, because that looks...
I backed that too.
Yeah, it looks like a throwback to just like a whimsical time in video game development.
Oh, I think I told you guys this already, but when I was at E3, I was talking to Team 17, which is publishing Yooka-Laylee, and I suggested, you know what? You know what would be great is if you have a level or a cameo by Banjo-Kazooie. And he sort of said, well, we're not ready to discuss that yet. So... what I'm interpreting that I mean, the way he said it and all that stuff, there's gonna be a cameo by Banjo-Kazooie, which would be great.
That would be great.
You know,
I also backed Abduction, which is the next Myst game.
Oh yeah, I heard of that one.
I think it's in alpha stage soon.
Yeah, I backed an adventure game that's sort of like a modern day Myst, in which a guy is forced to do really terrible things even though he doesn't want to save his wife. You know, and it's about how far will you go sort of thing, and the entire thing about it is that it's almost photorealistic. And I don't remember what it is. I'd have to look at my Kickstarter list. But TJ, okay, so you backed Yooka-Laylee.
Yooka-Laylee is actually the only video game I've ever backed. The only other project I ever backed was an action figure that I actually have right here. The little Mega Man X from True Force Collectibles.
Well, that's better than... Let me see. I'm going to look at the video games. I don't back video games much on Kickstarter anymore. I tend to... Oh, I backed it for... backed System Shock for $155.
It's got to be a really good video game for me to back it. Like... I have such a hard time pulling the trigger on stuff like that, just because you hear all the stories, man. How can you have faith in anyone that hasn't been doing it for a long time?
Well, here's the thing. I backed BattleTech because it's the original developers, right?
Yeah, that's what I do as well. I only go for the people that I have a lot of experience, that have the knowledge and the ability, and to put down, you know, a plan of what they want, a clear idea, and that's why I've been pretty good, you know, pretty... I think fortunate with the selections that I've backed, I haven't gotten screwed over, because I was hesitant about the Project Phoenix. I wasn't sure that I was, you know, ready to back it, especially when they talked about the story was like an angel with amnesia, and I'm like, okay, that's cliche, and I'm not backing that.
I backed the Slaughter, yeah, which has been getting a lot of attention lately, but I did not get my I did not download my copy yet. They've released it too back in January, so I have to tell these people, hey, I didn't download my thing yet. Or maybe I did and I don't remember. I probably got a code and I just didn't download it. There was one game that I backed on a whim back in the early days of when I first started banking, and that was Paper Sorcerer, and it actually was really, really good. Basically, what happens is you're transported into a book, so everything is pages. Think of it as an RPG, classical RPG version of Paper Mario, except with regular spells. I did back 30 Years of Garbage, the Garbage Pail Kids story, but it didn't make it, unfortunately. I would have loved a documentary about that. I remember backing Battle Chess, and I really wanted, but that didn't get through either. That would have been great. You ever play Battle Chess?
I did.
Yes.
I didn't realize that somebody was rebooting that.
Yeah, it didn't matter. See, that's the problem. No one knew. let's see. Video games that I backed. Yeah, I did back Yooka-Laylee. By the way, if you ever play Resistance, they're making a computer game version of that at some point, and they're going to kickstart it. So, Lateral Damage, which is a cute little cat destruction game by Sean Baptiste, who's a friend of mine who used to be with Harmonix. Let's see, what else? Oh, Stasis. Oh, that's right, Stasis. And it was released, and I never got my copy. I backed something called You Are Not the Hero, which is, I hope it makes it through. It's not a ripoff. Oh, I also did The Long Dark, which of course came through. Chroma Squad was really good. Have you played Chroma Squad?
No.
It's a game in which you play actors on a Power Rangers type game.
Huh.
and it's basically Power Rangers, except you. Son of Noor, that one is delayed forever. But it's not a ripoff, because the guy who did it was very honest and said all these and all that stuff, and he's going to try and come. Combat Cats was fun. It was a $5 backing. Among the Sleep, I also backed, but I haven't played it yet.
That's a bizarre one.
Yeah. Poker Smash I backed because it's awesome. I played it on Xbox Live Arcade. This is the PC version. And Tontine. I backed a web show called The World of Steam for $1. Oh, by the way, I'm looking at Pillars of Eternity. It shows it as Project Eternity. Remember when it was called Project Eternity?
Yeah. And then they changed it to Pillars once they got it all done.
So Wasteland 2 was the first thing I ever backed on this. And then Shadowrun Returns, then Republic, which is an okay game. I mean, I'm not sorry I backed it. It's just not my favorite thing. But if you see Paper Sorcerer anywhere, and I backed it for $3 and got a copy, so it should be really cheap, play it. It's really good. It's really good. So, anyways, so what have you actually been playing, Scott?
I played the episode 7 of the Minecraft Access Denied.
So something's coming out tomorrow, right?
And it was a fun little adventure where this this AI takes over this little town and starts trying to make everyone useful and more productive, and and then basically the creator of that AI is trying to resist and take down the computer, and you're Jesse and them arrive, and they two of them get captured, and you have to try to help the creator turn off the program. And it's really funny, and I like the way it talked too. And there was also a lot of the that old dial-up ringtone that you would hear that it would make that noise a lot. It was really nice to hear.
Yeah. So, if I remember correctly, something's coming out tomorrow that you were waiting for. August 2nd, something was supposed to come out for you. Or am I misremembering things?
I also got the Vault Tech stuff for Fallout 4. I played that. That was fun.
Wait, this is the Make Your Own Vault DLC, right?
Yes, Make Your Own Vault
DLC. Have you made your own vault?
That's what I'm starting to work on now that I've cleared out.
Well, here's a question. For those of you who don't know, vaults are basically big, gigantic, what's called experiments run by the government. So are you running...
Well, not necessarily the government.
Well, the people who made the vaults, anyway.
Yeah, Vault Tech.
But are you running experiments?
You can. I haven't done it yet. I have to build the place. That's what I'm doing.
No, I mean, can you run experiments on people?
Yes, you can.
Okay. I'm pretty sure you're going to be benevolent and not do some of the shitty things that Vault Tech has done in the past. I mean, they've done some really bad things.
There's an overseer there, and we have to discuss what the experiments are, what we're going to do, and she's like, you can hamper it if you want and do, like, light experiments, or you could really go all out and... And I'm not sure yet exactly how far you can go with these experiments, so it'll be interesting to see what you can do.
What would the reward be? Do you get a reward for doing whatever?
She says there's rewards, yes, that there's technology or something that she can give you once we figure out the experiment. So there might be some drugs or some guns or some.
Oh, there might be some drugs, some guns, and probably a chick in the back seat with the cover and the getaway car.
Yeah, well, I would hope that one of the experiments is make a vat, you dip people in it, and you get an army of super mutants. That would be a nice callback.
Yeah, you could definitely. I mean, you already got mutants.
Or just make ghouls.
So,
really, just surprised. Yeah. So, anyways, we're going to move on to the first news item, and it is. Sorry. There we go. Quote unquote, other surprises in store for NX, says Ubisoft. This comes to us from Get Destructoid. Nintendo may have infuriating little to say about its next gaming system right now, but we continue to have rumors to keep us guessing, and Ubisoft isn't done teasing what's ahead. Following Ubisoft CEO Yves Guillemot's comments about how the NX is, quote-unquote, really great, and will, quote, help the industry continue to grow and make and take it to a lot more casual players back to the industry, Executive Director of EMEA, Alan Corey, says the company has, quote, other surprises in development for the NX besides Just Dance that they will announce later. More Beyond Good and Evil and UbiArt Raven. Oh, that's just a thing. Corey also explained to Games Industry Biz that the publisher believes Nintendo has the power to reinvent the way families are playing, which is a curious statement. He says, Nintendo is a fantastic powerhouse of brands that are really cherished by a lot of fans and families. I'm still impressed by the recurrence of a success and appetite, even today, for Nintendo franchises on the current system. Okay, I have a problem with this in that it makes it sound as if the hardware is going to do, quote-unquote, something special, which is not what we want from the Nintendo NX. We don't care about what the hardware does, like the Wiimotes. It's the gameplay that's really matters. And I hate to say this, but gimmicks are gimmicks. You know, and hardware gimmicks are just gimmicks. When's the last time you played a Laserdisc game?
It sounds like a whole lot of not really giving anything away either. They're talking about Nintendo has a fantastic powerhouse of brands, but they just seem to play the same
five
or six over and over again.
And not even that, you know, they sometimes do Zelda. They always do Mario.
Yeah, I think they always do Zelda. And
not really. I mean, they do one Zelda.
At least, yeah.
But they only do one Zelda. And here's the thing: when you had the 360, did you only get one Halo game? When you had a PS3, did you only get one Uncharted game?
There was two Zeldas on the N64.
Right.
Right,
and there were two on the Wii, but there were both. One was at the beginning. It was really a Nintendo 64 game in disguise. I'm sorry, it was a GameCube game in disguise. And then you had what? Wind Waker? No, that was a GameCube.
Yeah.
Wait, what was Zelda on the Wii?
Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword were on the Wii.
Right, Skyward Sword. But like I said, Twilight Princess was basically a GameCube game. They just upscaled for the Wii.
Yeah.
You know, and they had this nasty habit of, I don't know. I mean, they gave what people wanted with Pikmin 3, I guess.
Well, Nintendo has a way of pulling things out of their hat at occasion. I mean, nobody knew what the heck Splatoon was supposed to be, but when they got their hands on it, it was ridiculously fun.
But, you know, that reminds me of Tearaway, though. You know, the Tearaway didn't exactly save the Vita.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that Splatoon makes the Wii U worth buying, but they do have a way of pulling rabbits out of their hat.
Well, everybody does, really. I mean, everybody gets one good game, at least.
Well, speaking of pulling out a game out of the hat, and since we're on Nintendo right now, did you see the story about there's another it's Lady Layton game.
They're going to have the new Layton, and it's going to be Lady Layton, not Professor Layton.
It's his daughter, and she's looking for him. Apparently, he's missing.
I wonder if she's a robot.
She'll be, obviously doing, probably like in the same style of the previous games, solving mysteries as usual.
You know, the problem I have with Layton, though, is that the first Layton was really fun, but there's just so many times you can redo the same puzzles over and over and over again, you know?
They're different puzzles.
No, I mean, in the second game, I saw that kind of puzzle, and that kind of puzzle, and that kind of puzzle again.
Yeah, but there's like, when you have like 250 puzzles per game, yes, you're going to go across like similar slide box puzzles now and then, but like, generally those games have a good way of coming up with logic-based stuff.
They really do. They have a ton of games. There are puzzles that aren't even in the main story that you could play on the side, and there are hundreds of them. I haven't even played all of those damn puzzles. They're so good, and so many of them. There's like a potion one where you have to guide the potion to the right pathway. It's just There's all sorts of crazy.
And I agree with Jonah on one end. Slide box puzzles are the bane of my existence.
It's like BioWare with the what is it called? Tower of Hanoi puzzles. In every game, they have a Tower of Hanoi puzzle.
But then you have like just all sorts of like visual trickery puzzles or special sort of math puzzles or riddles in of themselves.
Trick question puzzles, really. That seems to be the main theme about a lot of these puzzles, is sometimes they make it seem like it's harder than it really is, and the answer is just, like, really simple.
That reminds me that old game that was by Valve, I think it was. It's a really oddball one about this guy who solves puzzles in a Minnesota town. I forgot what it's called. Either Puzzle Quest... Not Puzzle Quest. That's a completely different type of...
I really like the story that they've written for the past, you know, like there's like two trilogies of the original Layton games, and you know, you have the prequel one and the main one.
Puzzle
Agent. I think the prequel one is actually better, but it was really good writing, and I'm looking forward to more of that writing.
It was Puzzle Agent. The first one. The second one, you know, see, the problem with the first one was way too easy. The second one was harder, but the story wasn't as good. I prefer a good story over the puzzles any day.
So that's a game that I'm looking forward to seeing again on 3DS, hopefully. They haven't announced when they're releasing it, if they are, but I'm really hoping that they do.
Yeah. You know what? It's by Telltale, that's right. Not Valve. I bet you could get Puzzle Agent for like $2 these days, or something like that.
I'm looking at this right now, and the art looks great. I love this.
Oh, the artist? Oh yeah, the artist is Jonathan Segra. He's known for a lot, and it was written by Graham Annable. For those of you who don't know who he is, he has some really weird, disturbing shit that he writes.
Puzzle Agent's $5.
Yeah, he does some really weird shit. He's disturbing, and the ending of Puzzle Agent is really, really disturbing, which is why I don't like Puzzle Agent 2, because it explains it and said, no, that was stupid, don't explain it.
It kind of reminds me of Grimm Fairy Tales.
Sort of. So, yeah, I mean, Puzzle Agent, like I said, its only problem is that it's really easy. And the puzzle's really easy, but I really enjoy the voice acting and the artwork of that game. So yeah, that's the hidden game advice for this podcast. Try Puzzle Agent, the first one. Ignore the second one. Anyways, we're gonna move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Alrighty. Fixes promised for botched Marvel Ultimate Alliance ports from Game Informer. The pair of Marvel Ultimate Alliance games from last generation, while not without flaws, are great expressions of the comics. That's why fans are so disappointed with Activision's troubled ports to PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. The games cost $40 apiece, or $60 in a bundle. Unfortunately, there are no noticeable improvements beyond slightly retouched graphics and improved resolution, and in the case of PC editions, there are major control and visual issues. That version reportedly doesn't recognize controller inputs properly and can't be easily mapped to keyboard and mouse. Additionally, the PC version is missing visual options that were present a decade ago in the originals. The Xbox One versions, which are already out, are missing achievements entirely. The DLC for Ultimate Alliance 2 is intact, but the Xbox 360 exclusive characters released for Marvel Ultimate Alliance 1 are nowhere to be found in any of the new versions. Making the situation worse, the Xbox One version's description claims you can play as Hulk. This is outright false without the DLC, as he was sold in a bundle with Cyclops, Nightcrawler, and Hawkeye after launch. Activision later announced that one of the issues has now been repaired. If you're playing on Xbox One, achievements should unlock properly. It was later shared via Twitter that both DLC for Marvel Ultimate Alliance 1 and fixes for PC port are coming.
Yeah, so $60 for a pair of games which aren't really improved from the originals that were, from 2009, I think, maybe, or... Anyways, Scott?
Yeah, it doesn't sound so good, you know. That's why I don't like the DLC thing.
Wow, it was back in 2006, actually.
Fighters you can't even play unless you pay extra. It's like, why, you know, it does feel like a money thing to get extra money out.
You see, back in 2006, though, it wasn't that much of it. It was more of a bonus than it was anything else. But yeah, it first came out in 2006.
Activision, this just seems to go along with Activision messing up things again.
Actually, no, the original Marvel Ultimate Alliance were out on Xbox and PS2. So basically, we're getting the Xbox 360 versions just a little bit upgraded. Did either of you play it?
Mm-mm. I loved those games. I played those with my buddies all the time.
Yeah, did you play multiplayer?
I'm a Marvel
co-op?
Idiot when it comes to like a lot of those characters.
I'm trying to tell what kind of game is it? Are you just brawling or what?
It's a Diablo style game.
I don't want to say hack. It's a beat 'em up. It's a 3D beat 'em up.
Yeah, but it has the isometric perspective that you have in Diablo.
So I guess sort of like Gauntlet Legends in a way.
Okay. But the other interesting thing is that when you play as a character, or maybe I'm thinking of something else. I know that Marvel Ultimate Alliance 2 covered Civil War, and you could either take Captain America's side or Iron Man's side.
Yes,
and you had an entire campaign.
What characters you had access to.
Yeah.
But more than that, you have an entire pool of heroes, and if you were put certain heroes together, like put all the X-Men together, and you get an X-Men team, and it gives you an appropriate bonus for it. Likewise, you could put the original Avengers together. You could put what was the team that the villains had for a while?
Something Six.
Not the Six.
You're thinking of Sinister Six for the Spider-Man, but I'm talking about like when Venom and a bunch of the others worked for the government.
Oh, it's not Suicide Squad. That's DC.
Right. I was about to say that too, but I can't remember it right now. But you get all these you get all these cool bonuses from like putting teams together from the comics.
Don't you get a special interaction too?
Yeah, a lot of people will interact with each other like when you're on. You'll go to a base hub between missions and talk to a bunch of the characters there.
Yeah.
And so you can have, like, Wolverine talking to Professor Xavier at the X-Mansion, and they have interesting dialogue. And it was just a really, really, really fun game back in the day, and I'm surprised they haven't gone back to that yet. Maybe these ports are indicative of what they're planning, but it's not looking too good.
They do have the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You'd think they would take advantage of that.
Uh-huh.
Kind of
it's not looking too promising.
The Guardians of the Galaxy game.
Or make it Star Fox. A Star Fox ripoff. Guardians of... Isn't that the sequel supposed to be coming out this year or next year?
Next year.
Okay. So keep on going, TJ.
Well, I was just saying, if this is how their ports are going to do, it's kind of disheartening.
Well, here's a question. Now, here's the thing. I'm not going to pay $60 for both games. But I will wait until it's like $30 for both games. Then I'll say, okay, sure, because that's the price I expect to pay for a game that's been out for the past decade, you know? And you didn't really remaster it. You just made it a little bit higher resolution. That's it.
Yeah. Like, I really hope that this isn't a thing like what Squaresoft was doing for a while, where they just ported the crappy old version of Final Fantasy VII over to Steam and said, this is how we're going to gauge how interested you are, so better pick it up if you want it.
Yeah, we're going to put out the shittiest version you want. Do you like it? We'll make more. Or Tales of Symphonia. And I think that was shitty because it was just a giveaway. If I remember correctly, it was a giveaway for... What?
They didn't give away Tales of Symphonia.
Yes, they did. For everybody who bought... Oh, what was the one with the Z? Tales of Z.
Oh, if you bought it. Okay.
Yeah, if you
Tales
bought...
Tales of Zestiria?
The other one's Zestiria.
Yeah, you got Tales of Symphonia for free, right? Mm. And that's the only reason why they released Tales of Symphonia like that. Because they had to get people to buy the new Tales game and say, oh, why don't we give away a really popular one, Tales of Symphonia... And they can't complain if it's a half-assed port because it's free.
Yeah, I really hope that If Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 is possible, I hope it's not behind the bar of people having to spend money on these garbage ports.
I hope it's not. Are you saying it's your hope is not dependent on people buying this?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you have to wonder what's going to happen with the next Batman. If there is going to be another Batman Arkham game. I mean, yeah, they said the Batman Arkham Knight would be the last one, but that's what they said about City and that's what they said about Origins. You know, but the thing is that was so badly botched on PC, and the console versions, while the gameplay was fine, the story and gameplay segregation made no sense. You know? Oh, look, you're going to fight Deathstroke, but you're going to fight him in a tank.
Yeah.
What have you been playing lately? I've been playing Batman Arkham City again. For the first time in a long while, actually. I don't think I played it since it first came out. And the reason
what
is
do
that.
You think?
It's still the same problems. Open world does not mesh well with what I was playing. I mean, I like the fact. You know, here's the thing. When I was playing Batman Arkham Asylum, I missed some of the combat options that you have in Arkham City, right? But otherwise, you know, I just don't like those Joker things, for one.
I will agree with you on Arkham Asylum for one thing. It's a much more linear thing that directs you much more towards the story. You can explore as much as you want, but it's very, like, it's a very wide river, and you can go wherever you want in it, but it's still a river.
Yeah, I mean, I triggered the Deadshot thing, and I triggered the other, the Hush thing. But I haven't gone through them because I don't need to, you know. At least if this was Arkham Asylum, then I'd be dealing with Hush and I'd be dealing with Deadshot, you know, as part of the story.
Then there's Zazz that's just sort of.
Well, I don't mind the Zazz thing because it's basically show you how well you can do your flying with. Oh, that's the other thing is I also missed the fact you could fly, although you didn't really need to fly at Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
Oh, you did fly, but it wasn't part of the gaming mechanic. I mean, we're getting way off topic here. So, anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Pokemon Go fans rage as tracking site shuts down. This is from Polygon. PokeVision, one of the most popular tracking websites for finding Pokemon in Pokemon Go, appears to have shut down. A week after CEO of the studio that developed this game warned that such services may no longer work. Forbes and then Kotaku both noticed the closure early this morning. PokeVision was not affiliated with Niantic Labs, Pokemon Go's maker, or app itself. It was a third-party knowledge base that revealed where specific Pokemon would spawn on a player's map and how long they would be available. PokeVision's FAQ said its data came straight from Niantic, which may have been a violation of Pokemon Go terms of service. In an interview with Forbes last week, John Hink, Niantic CEO, called the use of these sites and services cheating. People are hacking around trying to take data out of our system, and that's against our terms of service, Hink said. He added that players might find in the future that these things may not work. That day seems to have come for PokeVision, though its administrators are being vague about what led to the closure. Early this morning, Pokemon Vision tweeted this: "Hey guys, we wish we had some news for you. At this moment, we are respecting Niantic and Nintendo's wishes." PokeVision added that we kept it up as long as reasonable possible. Maybe things will change in the next few days. This closure, in particular, upsetting to Pokemon Go players, was not only feel they have done nothing wrong, but also suffered through a three-step glitch that incorrectly showed all nearby Pokemon as being the furthest away from their user. That was incredibly fixed by simply removing the 1, 2, or 3 steps indicator and showing only what type of Pokemon was nearby without any idea of proximity. Users are pouring out their anger through Twitter and Pokemon Go subreddit. Niantic representatives have not responded to the studio's role in the closure in response to fan anger over the footsteps issue the PokeVision shutdown.
By the way, before you say anything, there is additional information, and that is that fans have been demanding refunds, and they've been getting them. from Apple and from Android. Even though Android says you can't get a refund after 48 hours, they've still been getting them. And it's been relatively clean. You know, I want my $10 back. Or you got your $10 back.
Well, that's nice. I honestly don't see why they should be getting this upset. It's a third party source. It's not like Niantic or Nintendo was providing this. And honestly, the whole point of finding these Pokemon is to go out there and walk yourself and find them naturally, and not like just have a little, oh yeah, it's over here, here you go. Because I mean, yeah, it's like if a game company shut down GameFAQs or something, or one of those other walkthrough sites, and they you know, it just seems silly.
This is not a very good game, and people are cheating to get around. Like,
I don't know
one
if it's
the,
cheating
one of
actually.
Novel part of it.
It's not exactly cheating, though. I mean, I think, see, there's also problems with the game itself in terms of giving information, and these, rather than cheating, it actually gives you better information than what the game gives. There's also impossible to hunt for some Pokemon without these tracking software. And it's not like, you know, here's the thing, World of Warcraft, while Blizzard does ban things that are outright cheating, they do allow stuff that makes it easier. That's where macros come in, right? I mean, technically, there's a lot of World of Warcraft apps that would be, quote-unquote, cheating, but they're not cheating, they're just making the game a little easier to deal with.
I don't know, man. I mean, if your goal from the beginning was get all 150 Pokemon in the shortest time possible, there's funner things to do out there.
I don't think people are getting that, though.
There's actual Pokemon games. Go play those. You can do those. There's strategy guides written for those. It tells you exactly where the Pokemons are. You just go out there, get them in the game, and you can do it in about 30 hours.
Well, now Pokemon Go now has a 1.5 rating on the iOS App Store.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, you have to do what the fans want you to do. And in the end, you know, you can't tell people to stop having fun. And see, that's the thing about Chris Sawyer that really irritated me. You know why there was no sandbox mode in Roller Coaster Tycoon? Because Chris Taylor thought it was cheating, and how dare you? How dare you? And people made hacks to allow you to have a sandbox mode for building your park you want, and not a bunch of scenarios. You know. And here's the question, really. Is Pokemon Go a fad?
I mean, it most certainly is in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but you see, here's the thing. There are fads, and then there are games that just continue on. Let me put it this way. Batman's not a fad. Right? The Pokemon game itself, the actual RPG, is not a fad. Although, I will say this, it has gotten stale over the years because they haven't really changed it. But it's still popular. I mean, you still have a card game. But Pokemon Go, I mean, if they're not careful, they're going to kill the golden goose.
I would agree with that. I mean, at the end of the day, you do have to give people what they want. I just don't know that the, like...
It isn't cheat. It isn't like they're giving you free Pokemon, right? I don't know.
They just tell you where these Pokemon are, and you can go right
see,
to them.
Here's the thing. They don't appear in the same place all the time. This is more like, oh, there's a Pokemon all the way over there if you hunt for it right now.
Yeah.
This isn't, we're going to make Pokemon appear, or this is where all the buried treasure is. It's more of, oh, by the way, 2 miles down the road, there's Pokemon. You know? And here's the thing as well. People don't have time for Pokemon Go, for the most part. They just don't have the time to waste sitting around their own neighborhood, you know? They want to catch a Pokemon today. Right now. Maybe in the next hour. So like I said, you know, I don't play Pokemon Go past the second day, because it wasn't very entertaining. I mean, people were impressed that I caught a Voltorb. And I don't think either of you play Pokemon Go.
No, I have no interest.
And the thing that disappoints me about Pokemon Go is not real AR. If it was real AR, you'd have to go to a foresty area to catch forest Pokemon, or a river to catch a Magikarp, or, you know, and I know that might be impossible for some people, but that's the entire point. Make it, force people to travel around the country or around the world to catch Pokemon. That's what they really do on the show, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I guess so, yeah, I think so.
All the Pokemon aren't in Vermilion City.
Or at least, you know, a way around it. Like, if you could, you know, facsimilate water or something, just, you know, fill your tub up with water and then whatever would show up. I don't know. I don't know these Pokemon very well, so.
No. So, the argument from you two is complete indifference. And for me, it's, no, actually, I'm indifferent. You guys are on a Niantic side.
Yeah, it's not a service that Niantic provided, and Nintendo didn't provide it either, and so if they feel that it goes against the way they want the game to be played and the intent of it, then, you know, they can say, you know, tell them that, you know, it's their game.
I want to hear from Pokemon Go players out there. There has to be one of two of you who are listening. And if you use those third-party apps, why they're so important to you? We need to know why is Pokevision going down such a travesty, and why people are negative review bombing the game on the iOS store. Yeah. Although I will say this, you know, I would like to see it negative review bombed, so that when they make a Pokemon Go 2, they make it better. They have to make it better. I don't care about third-party software. I just want a better game. Even if it is free-to-play. But it's interesting that refunds are being accepted. And this is not refunds against Pokevision. It's refunds against Niantic. So Niantic is actually losing money that it thought it had. And that'll get its attention. You know, when people decide to take back their money, say, no, give that money back to me. That'll make Niantic say, wait a minute. And maybe they'll make their own tracking software and sell it for $5. You know? See, these people had a good idea. That's what Blizzard did. Go ahead.
I was going to say, the Pokemon Go Plus Watch, maybe that's what that was meant to do.
Maybe.
Someone made a Bejeweled app for World of Warcraft. Blizzard said, we like that, we'll buy it from you. So now you can play Bejeweled while you're playing World of Warcraft on the same screen as part of a World of Warcraft app. Yeah. That's old. That's like a couple of years old now. I don't know if they still do that or not. Oh, they probably do. Speaking of which, a new expansion is coming out for World of Warcraft Legion, and I didn't even know about it. Which sort of should tell you how far I've fallen from World of Warcraft.
Yeah, I didn't know either. I think the last one I knew about was Pandera.
Because it had Kung Fu Panda in it.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check. You see, the thing that bothered me, I learned that they changed the entire skill tree and made it slimmer for World of Warcraft. That was a turnoff for me.
Yeah.
I like the idea of the werewolf clan they come up with. I thought
the
that
Worgen?
Was neat.
The Worgen?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People on Horde were upset that Worgen were Alliance.
Why?
Because they just got garbage goblins.
Well, I like goblins. I was upset the goblins weren't Alliance. But the thing is, the Worgen are cool, they're werewolves. And they have this thing which they can fight as humans, but if they can also get angry and turn into werewolves during the fight.
Uh-huh.
And that was so cool, and Horde said, no, you're supposed to be the Alliance, the hippy-dippy-trippy guys.
They have the Minotaur race. Taurens. Yeah. I thought Taurens should be with the Alliance because, you know.
Yeah, but Taurens aren't werewolves. werewolves are werewolves.
Yeah.
Now they have one of the expansions, Lich Lord. The Lich Lord. Wrath of the Lich Lord expansion?
Wrath of the Lich King.
Yeah, that came out with the Demon Knight class. And now the new one is coming out with the Demon Hunter class.
Yes.
Which would be interesting. I wonder if there's going to be personal grudges between the Demon Knights and the Demon Hunters. So, yeah, I mean, I'll check out World of Warcraft again sometime. I wonder what's going on with my Draenei priest. And
I don't know, you probably have like a whole huge bar of blue experience to use.
Oh no, I probably have, for the thing I have
probably
to...
Probably log in, oh, you gained a level!
I have to respec, actually, because, like I said, they changed the skill trees. I don't know, I'm pretty sure it's just going to be frozen there. Oh god, if I log in, I'm going to be really upset if someone hacked my account. It was just, but the last time that happened. What's nice is that even though they sold all my shit and tossed all my characters deleted, I got them back because they save all that stuff. They remember what you had, which is really nice.
Yeah.
So I didn't lose everything. So, but you know, maybe I will try being a Kung Fu Panda if I ever get back into World of Warcraft. And the thing is that the president of Blizzard Entertainment knows me and considers me one of the core players because I was there when they first showed it off at E3, and I was there at launch. So maybe it's telling that one of the core players really doesn't care about World of Warcraft anymore. So he still has, what, 7 million players?
Yeah, but they're still apparently making enough money. That's what they said that in the statement. But
well, I mean, they are. I mean, they can get their people to buy anything. Remember when they sold a $25 mount?
Yeah.
And it was nothing special about it, except it looked different. It was a Crystal Pegasus or something like that?
Yeah.
They sold it for $25.
That's just crazy.
Mm. Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, the next news item is PlayStation VR requires about 60 square feet of space to use. This comes from Polygon. Sony's upcoming PlayStation VR headset will require about 60 square feet of cleared space to use and asks that players remain seated whenever possible when playing, according to the new documentation released by the company. The PlayStation camera, which is required to use the VR headset, needs a cleared play area of about 9.8 feet by 6.2 feet. Excuse me. Limited use of PSVR within the play area, according to the brochure. Clear an area larger than the play area of all obstacles before using PSVR and remain seated whenever possible. The application requires you to stand while wearing the PR headset, follow the application instructions carefully, and maintain awareness of your surroundings. The PlayStation VR will feature both a social screen mode, which allows people not wearing the headset to play along or to watch what the player is doing via the television. As Polygon reported earlier this year, the PlayStation VR headset also comes with a separate processor unit. The unit is about 5.6 inches wide by 1.5 inches tall by 5.6 inches tall. Kinect. So, you know, by comparison, the Wii is 6 by 1.75 by 8.5. So it's roughly this similar, just a little bit smaller than the Wii U. The headset, due out on October 13th, delivers 960 by 1080 resolution to each eye at a refresh rate of 120 hertz or 90 hertz. The field of view is about 100 degrees. A person's natural field of view is 180 degrees by 150 degrees. Just so you know, so that's for each eye, then you have 1980 by 1080, which is basically 1080p, which is basically HD, you know, not 4K, but HD. And God, does that sound terrible. This is not promising at all. Aside from the fact that you have to clear more space than people with the original Kinect did, you know, which isn't going to be good for people who happen to live in an apartment, say.
Yeah, and this is... I mean, even the Wii had to clear out a lot of space or clear out a lot of room. And yeah, that's not really good for cramped quarters, like you were saying.
Here's the thing. All the other headsets, you know, the Vive and the Oculus, they're self-contained. It disturbs me that you have to have a set-top box for it, even if it's small.
I just rather either do mouse and keyboard or controller. I don't need all these VR gadgets.
Well, you don't need the Move controllers, but it seems to sound like they sort of kind of need it.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, you can't really say that you just you don't need a set-top box for the Vive or the Oculus. You need a PC.
Yeah, but that's the other thing. In order to use the Vive or let's say the Oculus has VR. It's okay VR, and you still need a 950 card, NVIDIA card. You know, you still need a monster of a machine. And the PS4 is way below the specs of even your average PC. You know? The VR sounds really, really, really terrible. But cheap, so I guess you get what you pay for. Well, cheap is a relative term. You're still paying $400 for the thing.
Yeah.
And then you have to have the PlayStation 2 Neo, which now I realize why they required it to have 4K and all that stuff, so that it doesn't look like ass. So now you're spending, how much? I don't know, let's say $400 for a Neo. And then you're paying another $400 for the PlayStation VR. That's $800. That's the same price as an HTC Vive. So,
let me see here.
What are you looking up? Scott, throw in.
You don't need the Neo to do PSVR.
No, you don't. But they said there's going to be a difference in what you see.
Yeah.
So you do need a Neo for decent VR, if it is decent. I'm wondering if that's where the 120 to 90 hertz is from. Like, if it's a PS4, it's 90 hertz. If it's a PS Neo, it's 120 hertz.
Yeah.
Which 120 hertz is what you need for 3D for starters. I don't know. If I were a PlayStation 4 owner, I would not pre-order the PlayStation VR, and somehow find a way to play it on a demo somewhere in a store.
Yeah, it sounds like a good idea. Make sure this is something that's going to be something that you really want, because it's going to be a lot of demanding on space. It's going to be really expensive. And I'm not really even sure that this is going to be, like you said, is Pokemon Go a fad? And I'm still not convinced that VR is not a fad.
Well, you know, science point to VR not being a fad, but it's sort of like HDTV in that people are not going to take it until it's way down in price. Or yeah, at least the computers required to run it are cheap. See, that's the thing. It isn't that the HTC Vive costs $800. It's the fact that you have to have a monster rig to run it in the first place. I think that's the barrier, is the PC that you own.
Yeah.
This is why I want to get a Titan X, you know? 8K, woo! We're talking about future-proofing. Like TJ said last week, you know, that's the Titan X will last you three computers.
Yeah, provided you can keep it in stellar condition for that long.
Well, I mean, it's not too hard to keep a card in working order. And an ancient card, 480, GTX 480, that I gave my friend's son. And, you know, it was a little dusty, but I sent it through the mail with bubble wrap, and it came out through okay, and it worked. He only used it for a couple of months because he got a better card almost immediately after. He just needed it for that one computer.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did pre-order PSVR, so I'll tell you how garbage it is when I get it.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Here's a question. Are you going to get a Neo, is the question.
That is a good question, and I'm not sure yet. It depends. It depends on, like, as more information comes out, which it will, it depends on how much of a performance difference there will be.
The VR is coming out this year, folks. You know, this is not next year. This is now, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, if, what was it, like,
if
November?
If they finally do details on the Neo, and it's just, like, absurd how much the difference is.
I think it was supposed to be something like 2 teraflops and something like that.
Then I'll seriously consider it. Other than that, no, I'm fine. I'm fine with my $400 machine that I've had for a while already.
Until they start having games that are appreciably better on the Neo than they are on the PS4. Because that's the entire point of the Neo, is that your forward compatibility.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. I mean, yeah, we will see.
Oh, did I mention? Boom Boom Rocket is now in backwards compatibility for Xbox One. So if you have... I don't think Scott has an Xbox One.
No.
But it's just as fun as I remember it.
That's good.
Yeah. Maybe they'll release it for something else. I mean, is it only... the people who did it were Bizarre Creations, by the way. The same people, by the way, who did... I can't believe I forgot. That racing game. The Project Gotham Racing.
Okay.
They're the ones who did Project Gotham Racing. They also did, of course, Geometry Wars. So, yeah, Boom Boom Rocket is one of theirs. Anyway, this podcast has been really bad, but sorry, folks, if it's been bad. We can't help it. They can't all be gems.
It wasn't bad. I don't know what you're talking about.
Look for our show notes. Go ahead.
The content certainly wasn't as good as, say, last week.
Yeah, but I thought you both would be a little bit more outraged at certain stuff.
Nah.
Like at Marvel Ultimate Alliance.
Dude, I'm heartbroken, especially if that means that Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 doesn't come out. That would make me
You see, but
mad.
Here's the thing. It doesn't matter if the ports are shitty. If people are showing enough outrage, then it's going to give them an idea, hey, you know what? They want a good Marvel Ultimate Alliance game. So even though 1 and 2 are shitty ports, we're still going to go ahead with 3 because we know people want it.
I've been writing on my Twitter
that they did this pattern with the Final Fantasy games, that they seem to have imported the bad mobile phone ones instead of the... I mean, it's like I can play an emulated ROM of the original Final Fantasies, and they play better than these... ports that are on Steam.
You know, you see, the way you're praising it, now I want to get Marvel Ultimate Alliance 1 and 2, but I have to wait. I mean, I did rent it a while ago on Gamefly, and I thought it was okay, but there was other stuff that was coming out, so I just returned them quickly because I needed them. So...
I will say this. I've been on Twitter about Marvel Ultimate Alliance forever. I've been writing it. I've been saying, make it, make it, make it. I've been sending letters to my mom. I hope they make it. Listen here, Marvel and Activision. Infinity Wars are coming out. Tick tock, tick tock. Get on the ball.
Yeah, here we go. Activision, I don't trust you. I don't think you can do it. So let's see if you can prove me wrong.
The developer was Raven Software.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, Activision. But does Activision make any games, or they just have other people make games for them?
There are internal studio Activision games.
Okay. Right. I mean, aside from that shitty Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Here's the thing. You know, there's more. It's more likely to have second party games, or not second party, but see, it used to be that Activision and EA would do their own games with their own internal studios, but it became easier just to get other developers buy them. And bring them as a quote-unquote internal studio. I mean, they could have just... But they need the brand, you know? EA wasn't going to hire all the people who from BioWare and not keep the BioWare name, because the BioWare names means something.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, they could have just had the Musica, Ray Musica and the other guy, you know, and all the developers, and called it Electronic Arts, but... People would say, oh, it's Electronic Arts. But if you say it's BioWare, oh, well, there you go. It's BioWare. And they'll wait for BioWare to suck.
Yeah.
You know, I hope they learned a lesson from Dragon Age Inquisition. That sucked big time. I try to play it. I can't play it. It just sucks so much.
Oh.
Not too much of a lesson. They made DLC for it.
No, that DLC was planned out way in advance, though. You know, I mean, here's the thing. They were going to have more DLC for a game, and I forgot which one it was. and they didn't do it because they immediately realized that people weren't buying it, and I forgot the name of the game. It wasn't Dragon Age 2. Oh, yeah, maybe it was Dragon Age 2. No, Dragon Age 2 had DLC. No, I think it was Dragon Age 2. I think they had more DLC planned like they did with Dragon Age Origins. But Dragon Age Origins wasn't EA, was it? I think that was BioWare before they were purchased.
I wouldn't be surprised if it... It probably wasn't, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was Mass Effect 3 after the backlash on the ending.
What?
Canceled DLC.
Oh, no, no, no. They kept on... No. God, no. They released a crap ton of DLC for that. Because as much as people pissed on the original ending, people were playing the fuck out of multiplayer.
Oh, yeah. It was fun.
And people bought the shit out of the Omega DLC, and they bought the shit out of the Citadel DLC. That was the very last one. There was one in between it. Damn it, I forgot what it was. But they bought the shit out of Citadel DLC, which actually had a lot of closure for everybody, including, sadly, Robin Sachs, who passed away just after we recorded his roles for that. And for those of you who don't know, he was the one who played Zaid. So, yeah, it's kind of sad to play the Citadel DLC with Zaid because the voice actor. And if you play a female Shepard, he says one of the sweetest things. He says, "You know, don't tell anybody this, but I always thought you were beautiful." And that was the last thing that you hear from Zaid for the rest of the game because that Robin Sachs passed away. So, yeah. And I wasn't really... I wrote an article about the ending DLC, you know. And I know why it was like that. Because it was supposed to get... Mass Effect 3 was released in March. It was supposed to be released in November. So they pushed that way out the door way too fast.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, we'll see about Mass Effect Andromeda. You know,
I'm excited for that.
I like what I'm seeing. You know, I just have ideas for how to do a Mass Effect 4 in which it stays in the same universe. But I'm not going to say it online on the podcast because then they'll just steal it from me. I want to talk directly to BioWare and EA and tell them. I'll tell them the secret. And here's the thing. It would actually be a good idea for them because then they could do that old alternating year thing. You know, like they did with Call of Duty, like other games, you know, not Assassin's Creed, but... Command & Conquer. Remember, Command & Conquer had two universes. So you can always have two universes with Mass Effect, or at least two timelines. Because one of them is all the way out in another galaxy. Millions of years after the events of Mass Effect, which it has to be. You know what's really sad about it, really? The colonists who traveled to Andromeda probably think that the Reapers killed everybody.
That would be...
They don't know that we won. Because they said they launched like two-thirds into Mass Effect 3. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when Thessia falls. Maybe that's the catalyst. Thessia falls. Everybody goes, oh, crap. The Asari have been wiped out. And the Asari are the most advanced race in the universe, in the galaxy. So, anyways, it's just sad to me that way. You know, just knowing that they think that every... humanity and everybody else got torn apart by the Reapers.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback. Leave comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast, the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum. Send your comments to fans at gamingpodcast.net or subscribe to us on iTunes and iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon.
And I am at Al Bouchard.
I am at Johnny Chugs.
Yeah, so we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take it easy.